From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. We've got a great show for you today, especially because later on we're going to be joined by Alan Menken, the multiple Oscar-winning composer who wrote the songs for the Disney classics Beauty and the Beast and A Little Mermaid and Aladdin, a bunch of others. In his honor, Carl won't just record the voicemail message for today's winners. He'll invite the lucky winners to live with him happily ever after at his palace.
And there's, Peter, there's room for everyone in my Carl Castle.
I just want to be part of your world, Carl. So get ready to sing the number 1-888. Wait, wait.
Turning a little creepy.
Yeah, I am. I know. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name is Lynn Sudlow. I'm from West Lebanon, New Hampshire.
West Lebanon. That's west of Lebanon, right?
Exactly.
What do you do there?
Well, actually, I spend a lot of time in my car because I run an errand and personal assistant service.
An errand and personal assistant service? This means that people call you up to run errands for them?
Yes, and basically do all kinds of things that they're just too busy to take care of.
Really? Well, who runs your errands?
My husband.
Okay, well, welcome to the show, Lynn. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to comedian, writer, and performer, Mr. Peter Gross, right there.
Hi, Lynn.
Next, deputy editor and blogger for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor is here.
Hi, Lynn.
And finally, a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, Mr. Adam Felber.
Hello there, Lynn.
Hi, Adam.
I might need you to run a lightning round for me later.
Lynn, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl? This time, Carl Castle, of course, will recreate for you 3 quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain 2 of them. Do that, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice in your home answering machine. You ready to go?
That's great, yes.
All right, here is your first quote.
Recently, porking has gotten way out of control.
That was Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, who we hope was not talking about her private life, but about the big budget bill, which by her lights includes too much of what?
Of tax breaks?
No. She enjoys tax breaks.
Yeah.
There's a term for these? They're all against them?
Right, right. The earmarks.
The earmarks.
That's it.
Representative Bachmann made the remarks about too much, quote, porking in a written but clearly not carefully proofread statement. Unlike Sarah Palin, who just makes up words, Bachmann decided to use existing words really inappropriately. Ms. Bachmann and other Republicans this week were criticizing the $1.2 trillion omnibus spending bill, and by porking, she meant the $8 billion in earmarks hidden inside it. She has pledged to make sure Congress becomes more transparent so that if congressmen want to pork, they're going to have to do it in front of the American people. And sadly, the biggest porkers are never the ones you want to see porking. I'm not actually quite clear on what these senators said when reporters said to them, they said, why are you protesting these earmarks? You put them in the bill.
And they were like, that was before the election.
Something like that.
That was bad me who has the goatee.
Yeah. That was my evil twin, Ditch McConnell. That dastardly Ditch always trying to bring money home to Kentucky.
Damn you, Ditch McConnell. I know he's been in my office because there's a cigarette smoking in the ashtray.
All right, here is your next quote.
Time magazine just named its Person of the Year 2007.
That was a tweet from comedian John Hodgman. He was reacting to Time Magazine's 2010 Person of the Year. Billionaire Mark Zuckerberg, creator of what?
Facebook.
Yes. 5 years, yes, Facebook. 5 years after Facebook was founded, Time Magazine chose its founder as Man of the Year. They've taken some heat for being a little late on this.
Well, the magazine is called Time.
It's true. One lets them go by.
And it is a weekly.
It didn't help that this year's runner-up was Eli Whitney for his contribution to cotton ginning.
Maybe they think it's 2007 and people are still reading Time magazine.
It's possible.
Too soon.
Too late.
Too soon. The flesh of journalism is still warm.
Let's be respectful.
Yeah.
In their tribute to Zuckerberg, Time points out that Facebook, if it were a country, would be the fourth largest country on Earth. But of course, it would also be the most self-involved nation. Its primary products would be fake crops, fake mafia hits, and 1 million metric tons a year of embarrassing photos.
And it would be a country that's in a relationship with another country.
It would be. Well, look, Facebook just poked China.
Somebody needs to.
I'm not going to comment on this, Peter. I'm just going to give you a thumbs up so I feel like I'm participating.
There you are.
I like this segment. That's as far as I'm going to go.
All right, very good. Here's your last quote.
I can't remember the last time I bought a pair of suspenders. A lot of people send them to me. Ryan Seacrest sends me all my jeans.
That was an appropriately random thought from a man who ended his long-running interview show on CNN Thursday night. Who was it?
King.
Yes, Larry King. Very good. Yes. The man who pitched more softballs than Jenny Finch, who, by the way, is an actual famous softball pitcher.
It always works when you have to explain it.
I know.
Always.
Said farewell to his CNN show this week after his precipitous ratings decline reduced his audience to just his ex-wives and children, which still left him with about 2.3 million viewers a week. But the departure is kind of sad because his pleasant hour of whomever he had on talking about whatever they wanted has been killed in the ratings by other shows featuring angry people shouting at other people. To his credit, he tried angry confrontation, but he just ended up shouting compliments. And I was like, Barbra Streisand, how do you stay so young? You're beautiful! Didn't fit his style, you know?
He's going to keep it up. He'll just be in his home now.
His home?
Rec Room, you're on the air! Do you have any questions for Angela Lansbury?
Carl, how did Lynn do in our quiz?
Peter, Lynn had 3 correct answers, and Lynn, congratulations, you win our prize.
Well done, Lynn. Congratulations.
Lynn from New Lebanon, you're a winner.
Thank you all.
Bye-bye.
Hats off to Larry. He broke your heart just like you broke mine when you said we was part. He told you lies. Now it's your turn to cry, cry, cry. Now that Larry said goodbye to you.
Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Adam, speaker-to-be John Boehner made some news when he was profiled on 60 Minutes last weekend. Not because of anything he said, but because of something he did twice. What?
He cried.
He's a crybaby.
I want to take toys from him just to watch him do it. I want to hand him toys and take them away.
But when we say crying, if you didn't see it, we're not talking about a couple tears. You know, this is waterworks and blubbering. He says about his crying, well, what you see is what you get. Well, what we're seeing is a 14-year-old girl watching Twilight for the 18th time.
I know what everyone's... No woman could get away with that. No.
Well, that's what they say. I mean, if Nancy Pelosi ever cried, nobody would have taken her seriously.
Plus, she would short circuit.
Maybe that's why.
That's why.
Maybe that's why not.
But, you know, no man could get away with this either.
But he's getting away with it.
But he's the first.
He's not the first.
There's never been a guy.
He's not getting away with it. Listen how much fun we're making of the guy. Come on. We're tearing him to shreds for having emotions. I don't think he's getting away with it.
Men cry all the time. Athletes cry. Coaches cry. Everyone's
not crying. This Gatorade. Getting Gatorade dumped on them.
Peter, it's never too early to plan your summer vacation. We have got a hot getaway for you.
Oh, great.
It's in the heart of Ukraine, and the only thing you need to pack is your sense of adventure and a Geiger counter. What's this new must-see destination?
Well, first of all, I always pack my Geiger counter on vacation. Yeah. In the center of Ukraine, is it the Chernobyl?
It is.
Disaster site?
You've heard of 100 places to see before you die? This is one place to see as you're dying. Yes, if you ever wanted to visit the devastated site of a globally infamous disaster and you can't get tickets to the Spider-Man musical,
Ayo.
This is your best option. The 30-mile radius around the exploded reactor has been sealed off for decades, but now, for the first time, it's being opened to the public. And as one spokesperson said, quote, there are things to see there if one follows the official route and doesn't stray away from the group, unquote. Also, do not feed the three-headed tour guides.
Yeah. I heard the reviews are glowing.
Ooh. You know, they've got that great mascot, Mikhail Mouse, who's got six legs.
That's true.
Who's going to be like, you know what? It is pretty cheap. You know?
Well, we wanted to go to Maui, but the flights were so high.
So expensive.
Well, actually, it's supposed to be, I mean, it's like totally overrun with wildlife because there's like been nobody there.
Right. I mean, if anything bites you, chances are you'll gain the strength and powers of that animal, though. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's actually
worth
one
the
of
risk.
That's one of the rides.
Yeah.
And then later, they'll make a terrible musical
I know.
About you.
With your luck, that'll be like an earthworm.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It won't be any fun.
Worm man.
Great. Great dad. Now I can burrow.
Yeah. He's gained the power to process soil through his digestive system.
Cut him in half. Watch two worms grow.
Thank you so much. It's time, of course, for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT if you want to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is Bill McLaughlin from Crescent City, California.
Where's Crescent City?
It's Northern California by the Oregon border.
Well, what do you do up there?
I'm actually a longshoreman.
You're a longshoreman?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm going to confess, I didn't think there were many of you left.
Actually, there's not. We have to travel a long ways to get work.
Right. So you're out there and you're unloading and loading ships.
You know, I actually have to drive all the way to San Francisco for work.
Do you really?
Yeah.
That is a long drive.
Yep, sure is.
Well, Bill, welcome to the show. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Bill's topic?
I'm dreaming of a green Christmas.
Problem with Christmas is that it is an energy hog. All those lights and car trips to the mall. And as it turns out, Santa's sleigh only gets 4 miles to the reindeer. So, we were excited this week to read about an attempt to make this Christmas more environmentally sensitive. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about energy-saving Christmas ideas. Choose the true story, and you'll win our prize. Ready to play?
Yes.
All right. First, let's hear from Kiri O'Connor.
Phil Johnson is a noted artist and, truth to tell, a bit of a hoarder. His barn in Thomaston, Connecticut is festooned with old Chevy fenders, rags, and plastic Red Sox cups. But when he proposed to the town selectmen that he create an all-recycled nativity scene for the town green, they immediately agreed. Johnson worked all November under cover of tarps on his creation. Neighbors saw him hauling metal. They heard him soldering. They even saw him pull an old meat smoker, presumably for the manger. Finally, on Thanksgiving, he finished just in time for the Friday morning unveiling. The kindergartners from St. Rose of Lima School were marched out for the ceremony, their little faces shining in anticipation. And then their little faces filled with horror when the tarps fell. There, amid the shining hubcap halos and bobbing steampunk wise men, was a family of opossums, chomping on the shepherd's robes, gnawing off the angel's feet, and, worst of all, the mother possum ran off with the baby Jesus in her nasty, nasty mouth. They were screaming and crying. It was horrible, said Carol Fitzgerald, their teacher. Johnson is repairing the scene, but admits the smoker was the problem. I guess there was still some brisket in there, he said.
Hungry opossums ruin a recycled crash. Your next story of a Christmas that will make Al Gore's heart grow 3 sizes comes from Peter Gross.
What's the last thing you'd remember to do every year when the holidays come around? Well, other than faking appendicitis to get out of going to your in-laws. Of course, it's buy wrapping paper. Well, for Constance Schramm of Middlebury, Vermont, she does not have that problem. Granny Schramm, as she's known to family, has been using the same wrapping paper for her presents since Christmas of 1980. Every year, she generously showers her 3 children and 8 grandchildren with dozens of gifts, makes them neatly unwrap the same disintegrating paper that she used the previous year, and immediately stores it away for the following Christmas. Except, of course, for that one year when 6-year-old Jimmy accidentally threw out a piece of the sacred paper and Granny Schramm made the whole family spend the next day rifling through the town dump. As you can imagine, her family is less than thrilled. Says her son Jason, "We get what Granny Schramm is doing, but honestly, it's kind of gross. It's hard to get excited about opening up a present that looks like it's been wrapped by a homeless person." Despite these criticisms, Granny Schramm is undeterred. Asked why she doesn't just give unwrapped presents rather than ones covered in decades-old paper, she frowns and says, "Well, what would be the fun in that?"
award-winning recycled wrapping paper. Your last story of a Christmas echo miracle comes from Adam Felber.
Hey, kid, come over here. A little closer. Listen to me. One word. Eels. Get into eels. They're the future. Eels. Yes, while lots of folks might be hesitant about the switch to alternative energy, the good people of the Helsinki Sea Life Center are fjorging ahead by harnessing the power of electric eels to power their Christmas lights. Going green, well, green and slimy, has never been easier. Four specialized steel probes in Finland's finest electric eel tank capture enough of the 650 volts per eel to power a Christmas tree and some extra lights. Eel spokesman Marcus Dernajaitin says that it works great. Quote, at feeding time, though, it really powers up. You can hear the voltage increasing, and the lights shine bright and steady. Presumably, things calm down when they're finished.
All right.
These, then, are your choices. From Kiri O'Connor, a creche made entirely of recycled products that were ruined by wild opossums. From Peter Gross, a woman who won an award for her obsessive reuse of wrapping paper. Or from Adam Felber, electric eels powering Christmas lights at an aquarium. Which of these are the real story?
Well, I like number three. It sounds cool, but I think it's number two because I think they're talking about my grandma.
Really? Your grandmother also is an obsessive recycler of wrapping paper?
Yes. Please don't rip it.
All right. Well, your choice then is Peter's. Well, we spoke to someone familiar with the true story.
It's not like the eel is hooked up like Frankenstein and wired up for the display. The probe is put in the water, and so when the eel is charging, it's getting the electricity off of that.
That was Erica Hornbrook. She works with the eel exhibit at the Shedd Aquarium here in Chicago, explaining how you could, in fact, power your Christmas lights with an electric eel. So I'm sorry you did not win, but you did earn a point for Peter for his terribly true-sounding story. Well, thank you so much for playing.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
When you're in the dark and you want to see, you need a
electricity, electricity.
Flip that switch and what do you get? You get a
electricity, electricity.
And now for the game where somebody who has won just about every accolade you can comes on to try for one more.
Makes a total fool of himself.
Well, we'll see. Who is the person with more Academy Awards than anyone else now living? It's not James Cameron. It's not Hilary Swank. It's not any writer or director or actor. It's composer Alan Menken. He has got 8 Oscars for his songs and scores for movies like The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, and Pocahontas. He joins us now. Alan Menken, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
So, got to ask you about the Oscars. You've won more than anybody else now living, which is pretty impressive.
Thank you.
First question, of course, where do you keep them?
I have them in my studio in an awards cabinet.
Right, okay. So you're not one of those people, oh, I just leave it in the bathroom. You actually take it seriously. You put it in the glass.
I do take it seriously.
All right.
Yeah. I have them all set up, you know, waiting for 2 more so I can have a bowling alley.
It occurs to me, you have enough that you could actually create little scenarios. You could have little dinner parties.
Yeah,
or Oscars
they could talk. And also I have the Oscars, like, maybe face off against the Golden Globes and then the Grammys come and smash them all up.
It's amazing you ever leave your house with all that playtime. As I understand the story, you grew up around New York, huge fan of musical theater, became a composer yourself, you were working off-Broadway, you had a big hit in the 80s with Little Shop of Horrors, and then Disney calls.
Actually, you know, what was really exciting is Howard called, my late collaborator, brilliant collaborator.
Howard Ashman, the lyricist.
And he had been contacted by Disney about a number of projects, and he said, you know, animation really interests me, and Little Mermaid was a great project. And Howard got in touch with me, and what was really exciting to me was that this was going to be Howard's and my follow-up to Little Shop of Horrors. And, I mean, Disney at that point hadn't had much going on for a while, so I didn't know what I was getting into, except, of course, I loved Disney growing up.
I mean, Little Shop of Horrors, for those who haven't been lucky enough to see it, there's a really good movie version of it, but it is a musical version of that cheap horror movie from the 60s. It involves a horrible man-eating plant.
The Roger Corman movie, yeah.
Exactly. It's very wry. It's kind of black-humored. Disney, did they want that? Did you go in and pitch that and say, and then Ariel gets eaten by an enormous...
No, I think they just wanted the technique that we had for writing shows. But they wanted us to devote it to creating some new titles that could fit alongside Snow White and Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty. And,
well, you did that.
Yeah.
Did you?
Worked out.
One of the things that we noticed when we looked into your resume was prior to your huge success with Disney, you did some interesting musical adaptations. You did a musical adaptation of Before Little Shop of Horrors, which itself was pretty unusual. You did a Weird Romance. You did a musical adaptation of The Apprenticeship of Duddy Kravitz.
Yes, we did.
Which was an early, obscure Richard Dreyfuss movie.
Well, it was a Mordecai Richler novel, which is very, very popular in Canada. And I think we're going to have a production of that next year in Canada.
All right. Popular in Canada. Well, Lord knows, those are the three words that mean musical comedy success. One of the big numbers in Little Shop of Horrors is sung by the maniac dentist, played by Steve Martin in the movie version. And we were interested to find out that you actually came from a family of dentists.
Ah, yes. Lots of Menkins for dentists.
Really?
My dad, who at the age of 89 just retired recently.
Oh, really?
Is a dentist. My father's brother's a dentist. My father's father was a dentist. My mother's sister's husband was a dentist. My father's sister's husband is a dentist.
What's wrong with you?
I failed.
Are you a little you're a little bit of a disappointment to the family?
But I did in fact contribute to dentistry by creating the dentist Little Shop of Horrors, and I did have the idea that the dentist should laugh himself to death on nitrous oxide, which when we conceived that, my dad actually was president of the New York chapter of the American Analgesia Society, Society of Dentists that promoted the use of nitrous oxide as safe, and I thought my dad would find it funny. So as I always do, I sent a tape to my parents, a little cassette tape, and my mother leaves a message on the machine, and she says, "Okay, honey, yeah, we heard the show. Okay." And I said, "Oh, that's weird." And Janet said, "Oh no, I think your your mother's so moved." I said, "I don't know." So I called them up and said, "How would you feel if you had devoted yourself to promoting the use of nitrous oxide as safe, and your son wrote a musical in which his dentist laughs himself to death?" And then after the show was successful, my dad actually provided all of the slides of teeth that we used in the show. So
I have two thoughts. First of all, that is a first world problem. Secondly, that is a musical, what you just described. Son of a family of dentists rebels, leaves the house, writes a musical, slanders dentistry. Just think of the big ballads. Just think of the numbers.
And I want to add, thirdly, that I've never met the woman, but it sounds to me like you do a dead-on impression of your mother.
Got that.
Is it weird to have so much of your music so much a part of the popular imagination? I mean, have you ever, gotten to an elevator and heard one of your songs?
Yeah, it is strange, because I'll hear a song and it sounds familiar, and I go, "Is that mine?" And I'll go, "Oh yes, it is." But it's great. I mean, it is one of the great blessings of my life, is that I'll sit down sometimes and play, a concert or something, and I'll find people singing along with me, and it's just amazing. I literally go find myself crying on stage because it's so special.
You could be Speaker of the House.
Yeah, I know. Well, Alan Menken, we're delighted to have you with us. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You Shouldn't Have. No, seriously, you shouldn't have.
Every year about this time, we do a Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me gift guide. It's really more of a warning than a guide. We're going to ask you three questions about terrible toys you should never give to any child you love. If you get two questions right, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's Voice, on their home answering machine, the prize that anybody would like. Carl, who is Alan Menken playing for?
Alan is playing for Tim Garrett from Monette, Missouri.
All right. First toy. Most kids can't wait to grow up, and toy makers have taken advantage of that desire with which of these toys? One of these really exists. Is it A Mad Men brand toy liquor cabinet? B, a child-sized temporary lower back tattoo, also known as a baby tramp stamp? Or C, the computer game Turbo Tax for Kids.
Oh, my God. I'm going to go for A.
The Mad Men brand toy liquor cabinet.
I would think so. I think that's great.
For your own little Don Draper. They should do that, but actually it's the tramp stamp, little baby tramp stamp.
Oh,
temporary
no.
tattoos.
Oh.
And it goes in the lower back.
Yeah, in the lower back, just above the...
diaper.
That is so that is distasteful.
I know.
And the baby, you know, a drinking set would be very classy.
You think so?
Yeah. A little milk, you know, two fingers of milk.
What can I pour you?
Yeah.
Emulate daddy.
Yeah. It'd be all right, four fingers of milk then.
You still have to. You have two more chances. Here's a great present for a girl you would never actually want to buy for any girl you liked. A, the girls only cleaning trolley. B, the Hooters Waitress of the Year 2018 baby onesie. Or C, the Wait for Prince Charming game.
I'm going to say C, Wait for Prince Charming game.
Really? The game when you sit around and just do nothing, you just keep rolling the dice hoping that eventually the prince will show up.
What was the second one?
The second one was the Hooters Waitress of the Year 2018 baby onesie.
Okay, you know, can I change my choice?
You may.
I'm going to go to A.
You're going to go to A?
Cleaning trolley.
You're right. Yeah. Very good.
Oh. I was hoping for the Hooters outfit.
It's pink, of course, the little cleaning trolley, and it comes with a little mop and a broom and a bucket. Like the grown-up version, it does not come with a living wage. All right, you've got one right, you got one wrong. Get this right, you win, you know. It's the dramatic tension, third act of the musical. Here we go. Last question, kids like plush toys, right? So they'll love this special line of stuffed friends. Is it A, the roadkill line of stuffed animals? B, stuffed Larry King? Or key, cuddle a banker line of stuffed financiers?
Oh, God. I think the only one I'd find palatable is C, stuffed financiers.
Stuffed financiers?
It's slightly more gross than roadkill, isn't it?
Really? Slightly more gross. And you'd bring them home and you'd give them little bonuses?
I think you would ride your tricycle over them.
Well, I think they're already stuffed, I think.
That's true. They're already stuffed.
Okay, I'm saying C.
You're saying C? I'm afraid it was A. It was, in fact, the roadkill line. They do come with little tire tracks, bulgy eyes, tasteful guts. Sorry about that.
Oh, yeah. My God.
You know,
kids would rather play with dead animals than bankers.
Oh, no, I failed. I apologize.
At least when you save a run-over animal, it's grateful. Carl, how did Alan Menken do in our quiz?
Well, Alan had one correct answer, but he needed at least two correct answers to win for Tim Garrett.
Oh, damn, oh, I'm sorry.
It's all right. It's all right.
You've given the world so much. You're allowed to mess this one thing
I think
up.
You're going to. Perhaps you'll find some comfort in your shelf full of Oscars. Alan Menken has just been nominated for yet another award, in this case the Golden Globe, for his song I See the Light in the Disney film Tangled. He has composed pretty much every great animated movie musical you've seen in the last 20 years. Alan Menken, thank you so much.
Thank you. Good
for being with us. What fun to have you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Under the sea, darling, it's better down where it's wetter, take it from me. Up on the shore, they work all day. Out in the sun, they slave away. While we're devoting full time to floating under the sea. Down here, all the fish is happy as off through the wind.
Thank you so much. In just a minute, Carl Claus takes to the sky in a miniature sleigh led by Rheimdolph, the rhyme-nosed rhyme deer.
Someone's been a very bad boy. Yeah.
That is our somebody own version of the year-end clearance sale. Yeah.
Somebody got into the eggnog. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge coming up. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Peter, the Los Angeles Clippers are not having a great season. They're 5-21.
There's
no sign. Well, there's no sign they're going to get any better. Well, this week it came out that it's even worse than we thought. At home games, they're getting repeatedly heckled by whom?
Me. I actually went to a Clippers game recently. I was laughing at them a lot. Not just by their fans. Their fans?
Well, not just by their fans. That would be obvious.
Their players on their bench?
No.
Coaching staff?
Keep going upwards.
The owner of
the team? Owner of the team is heckling them. Donald Sterling is his name.
I did not deserve that bell.
No, the Clippers, if you don't follow the NBA, are one of the most storied franchises in all of sports. And the stories all begin, once upon a time, there was a team that sucked more than any other. Apparently, Clippers owner Donald Sterling has had enough. He's begun hurling insults at his own players from courtside. Really, he should be directing his heckling at the other team like any fan would do. Like, the next time the Heat comes to town, he should say, "Hey, LeBron, you play like the Los Angeles Clippers." The things he shouts, "Why are you in the game? You're out of shape. Why did you take that shot?" Those are some of his samples.
Who hired you? I went to a Clippers game because I test drove a Kia, and as I was leaving, the guy was like, "Do you want to go to a Clippers game?" I said, "Sure," and he gave me a coupon that was like, "Go online and you'll get 2 free Clippers tickets," and they actually won that game.
So
who did they play?
Worse?
The Kia dealership guys?
The Sacramento Kings.
Which was worse, going to a Clippers game or test driving a Kia?
That's what I was wondering, like, who's slumming it in this relationship?
Adam, computers can do amazing things. They can beat grandmasters at chess. They can figure out what movies we want to see next. But programmers will soon unveil a computer that hopefully can do what?
Wow, that's a nice broad,
yeah, it is.
Broad question there. I find your keys.
Oh, I'll give you a hint. It's actually...
The first thing it says is, "Where did you have them last?" And then it says, "Why don't you try patting every part of your body in order to find them?" And then it says, "Maybe you left them in the car." And you say to it, "I never leave them in the car." And it says, "Well, maybe this time you did. You might as well check."
If it works, when it does it, it will give answers in the form of a question.
It's a therapist? It plays Jeopardy.
It plays Jeopardy, yes. Yes, it's true. This computer will play Jeopardy for 3 days in February. Jeopardy is planning to pit the show's most successful champions against an IBM computer named Watson. The computer will have to pick questions to answer from the big board. It'll have to understand the meaning of the question. It'll have to answer it in the form of a question. The chat with Alex Trebek is going to be pretty awkward, though. I work in an office. I am not programmed to have hobbies.
But even I know you look better with the mustache.
If this works, though, we'll see more computers on game shows like the Newlywed Game. Craziest place you've made whoopee? In the USB port, Bob. Kiri, in this age of luggage fees for bags, frequent business travelers have to limit what they take with them on their trips. Well, this week, the Westin hotel chain launched a new program providing them with what? Providing travelers, that is, with what?
Something that they can't bring with them?
Yeah. Did you get it there?
I need a clue.
Well, it's like, hello, front desk. I need a wake-up call in the morning and a jockstrap.
Your fitness wear?
Yes. Yeah, your sports, your workout equipment. Workout gear, clothing, that is. Here's how it works. The guest at the hotel picks up the shorts, socks, sports bras, and shoes at the front desk, gets in a good sweaty workout, returns them in, you get to wear them next. The Westin assures travelers the gym clothes will be treated to the same cleaning process the sheets get. Which makes us think, okay, now we don't want to be sleeping with the sheets.
Yeah. Just remember, you know, if you pack anything, pack a black light.
You know, I don't even like bowling shoes. I mean, this is... way worse.
In any event, the Westin hopes this new service will be more successful than the previous recycling effort. The "You're not going to finish all of that, are you?" room service repurposing program. Adam, Swiss banks are legendary for their high-class efficiency, sophistication, and discretion. But the Swiss bank UBS is so concerned its employees could sully that reputation, they've issued a lengthy memo telling them to avoid what?
Gambling.
No.
Eating Swiss food.
Well, eating something.
There's something that they don't want.
Yes.
There's something indiscreet that they might eat.
Something, yeah.
Garlic?
Yes. Garlic and onion-based dishes, in fact. The 43-page dress and behavior manual is a cross between the Marine Corps handbook and what not to wear. Some of the tips are fairly obvious. Women, no short skirts. Men, no fingernails longer than 1.5 millimeters. Others are more difficult to understand. Men's ties should match the morphology of their face.
Wow.
Whatever that means.
My mom used to say that all the time.
Yeah. We can't imagine what the situation at UBS was like before that necessitated this memo. You know, fire-breathing bankers running around with giant claws for fingernails and bikinis and ties that were in direct conflict with their facial morphology. The men are instructed to wear, and in great detail what this means, superior quality underpants. And that's defined, you know.
That matches the morphology of their genitals.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago or upcoming shows on the road in South Carolina and Miami, Florida. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, this is Owen McGuire from Starkville, Mississippi.
Hey, how are things in Starkville?
Going well. They've been pretty cold, but we warmed up for a little bit today. So.
Yeah.
And, of course, cold to us is around 30. So.
Yeah, how are you guys dealing with that?
Not well.
So what do you do there?
I'm actually a graduate student at Mississippi State University.
Oh, wow. And what do you study?
I'm working on my MBA.
Oh, you're going to be working in business?
I hope to be. I would like to work in higher education in some way.
That's a better choice because there may not be any business by the time you get out. So. Well, welcome to the show, Owen. You are going to play our game, which you just have to finish these news-related limericks that Carl will begin for you. Finish 2 out of 3, and you will win our prize, Carl's voice, on your home voicemail. Ready to go?
Let's do it.
All right. Here's your first limerick.
The iPad's part blessing, part curse. It's making its own universe. It fits in no pocket, so though you might mock it, we men need to carry a
purse.
Right. Sure, you know. Tablet computers are cool, but if you're a guy, owning one comes with a decidedly uncool price. They require you to carry a large square bag, a man purse. So many guys balk at this. So this week, the New York Times suggested more masculine alternatives, such as an old ammunition bag, say. Or what about just disguising it as a football? Or as some kind of firearm? That's manly. Or you can just cover it in barbecue sauce. That'll be good.
Talk about a first world problem.
Yes. Here is your next limerick.
I'll give you some great flirting tips. Don't work on your slick verbal quips. Just look in my face at the kissable place and tell me that I have nice
lips.
That's right, lips. A popular dating website is confirmed with those two hillbilly yokels and Deliverance have known for years. The secret to picking up somebody is to tell them they have a pretty mouth. Global participants, thousands of them, say the best pickup line is, you have beautiful lips. The key, though, is not to elaborate, you have beautiful lips loses 90% of its effectiveness when followed by, especially compared to the rest of your face.
Yeah, that probably doesn't work too well.
Right.
It's so specific and technical. The flesh at the front of your face.
I am
appealing.
Enamored of the morphology of your lips.
They your really lips match your tie.
All right, here is your last limerick, Owen.
December is women's month now. Let's raise more attention somehow. We're trying our luck without wax or pluck and grow in one big solid
eyebrow.
Yes, eyebrow. Unibrow, good enough. Disappointed to be left out of last month's Movember. That's when, you know, men grew mustaches for charity. A feminist website has declared this month, December, Decembrow. They're encouraging women to cease plucking and waxing their eyebrows in favor of big, bushy unibrows. Think Frida Kahlo, a Cro-Magnon.
You can't do it. You know, you can't grow a unibrow. I couldn't grow a unibrow.
Well,
in
the
a
implication
month.
Is that if women stopped plucking on a daily basis,
for one
all
month,
of a sudden,
for 1 month, they'd suddenly be Bert from Sesame Street.
It's crazy.
It really would point out how beautiful their lips look, though.
Yeah, I know.
Because you couldn't look above that.
Yeah, exactly.
Carl, how did Owen do in our quiz?
Well, Owen had 3 correct answers, Peter, so that means he wins our prize. Congratulations, Owen.
Well done, Owen.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for playing.
Y'all are awesome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
How did I get here in this awkward position? My 2 eyebrows formed a coalition.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Peter Gross and Adam Felber each has 3 points. Kerry O'Connor has 2.
All right, be that way.
Okay. Here you are, Kerry. You're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. This week, Congress approved the blank package negotiated between Obama and Republicans.
The tax cut.
Yes. The Justice Department filed a lawsuit against BP and 8 other companies for damages caused by the blank.
Gulf oil spill.
Right. Heavy snows caused the collapse of the roof of the Metrodome in blank last
Minneapolis.
Sunday.
Minneapolis.
Yes. New terrorism charges were filed this week against the Nigerian man who attempted to bring down a plane by hiding explosives in his blank.
Underwear.
Right. The New York Jets suspended an assistant coach who blanked a Miami Dolphins player during the game last Sunday.
Tripped.
Right. Best known for the Pink Panther movies and Breakfast at Tiffany's, among many others, director blank died Thursday at age 88.
Blake Edwards.
Right. To cheer up a woman at a Wisconsin law firm, her mailman decided to deliver her mail while blank.
Dressed in his boxer shorts.
Oh, even worse. In the nude. Oh. In the all together. It may be the holidays, but that was one package the young paralegal did not want. The mailman says he was, this is true, he's saying he was just trying to make her laugh.
Hey, if it fits, it ships, you know what I mean?
Wanted to brighten her day with a little junk mail. What? Instead.
Hey! Yeah,
junk mail!
Poor guy, you're like, I really want to make her laugh. What makes women laugh? I know.
When
can I take off my clothes? Yeah. That's what makes them laugh.
When can I think of when I get the absolute biggest laughs of my life?
Exactly.
What situations?
Carl, how did Kerry do in our quiz?
Kerry had a fine round, Peter. 6 correct answers, 12 more points. She now has 14 points and the lead.
There you are. Well done.
It will not last.
We have flipped a coin. Adam's decided to go next, so here you go, Adam, fill in the blank. On Thursday, a London court granted bail to jailed WikiLeaks founder blank.
Julian Assange.
Right. On Wednesday, the House voted to repeal the military's controversial blank policy.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Right. Protesters took to the streets in Italy after Prime Minister blank survived a no-confidence vote.
Berlusconi.
Right. School lunches across the country will be revamped under the new child blank bill signed into law this week.
Obesity. Nutrition.
Yeah, good enough. Clothing chain The Gap is facing criticism this week after it was revealed a canvas tote bag printed with the words Made in USA is actually blank.
Made in China.
Of course. This week, a gunman escaped with $1.5 million in chips from the blank casino in Las Vegas.
The Bellagio.
Right. Because they are too dangerous for babies, federal authorities made it illegal to sell blanks with drop-down signs.
Cribs.
Right. Two thieves smashed a window and broke into a store in Canada where all of the merchandise is blank.
Free.
Right. Very well done.
You got them all.
The store is called... The store is called The Free Store. It's no big secret that you can come in and take whatever you want for free. The owners of the store were really surprised at the break-in, saying, for the most part, being a free store, we wouldn't expect someone to come in and rob us because they can come back and get anything they want for free the next day.
Yeah, but then they don't get to break the windows,
That's
do they?
That's the fun part. Carl, how did Adam do in our quiz?
Adam had a perfect game. He had 8 correct answers, 16 more points. He now has 19 points and the lead.
All right, then.
Wow.
I guess Peter has to do the same to win, right?
Yes, he would tie Adam Felber with 8 correct answers.
Here we go. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. On Monday, a federal judge in Virginia ruled that a key provision of the new blank law was unconstitutional.
Healthcare.
Right. After undergoing emergency surgery, special envoy to Afghanistan and Pakistan blank died at age 69.
Richard Holbrooke.
Right. Even though party leaders made it clear they'd prefer someone else, RNC chairman blank announced he would run for re-election.
Michael Steele.
Right. This week, Nissan released the Leaf, the first mass-produced car that is fully blank.
Electric.
Right. A police officer in a small Polish town was able to fulfill his one fine-per-day quota by blanking.
Finding himself.
Right, for walking on a railway track. Officials admitted that some retouching was done in the official engagement photos of Kate Middleton and blank.
Prince. Edward?
No, William. Prince William, 6 years after his death. Postal authorities announced a new stamp featuring former President blank.
Gerald Ford?
No, Ronald Reagan. How soon they forget.
Yes.
A sales team at the Just Born Candy Company was promised a trip to Hawaii if they met their sales goal, but they came up short and instead won blank.
Naked.
A trip... A trip to Fargo! Instead of a tropical luau, the team got a spaghetti dinner at the VFW in West Fargo, North Dakota. Temperature on the day, 7 degrees. Still, they say they had a good time, so one team member as a team, this is something we will never forget. 20 to 30 years down the road, when we see each other, we'll say, remember Fargo? Unquote. Yeah, how could I forget the time I lost 2 fingers to frostbite? Carl, did Peter do well enough to win?
He needed at least 8 correct answers to tie Adam Felber, but he had just 5 correct answers. So, with 19 points, Adam Felber is this week's champion.
All right, well done. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict who Time Magazine will choose for 2011's Person of the Year, a year from now. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Subaru, where all vehicles are built in zero landfill plants. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. The Kauffman Foundation, working to grow economies and expand human welfare. Learn more at Kauffman.org. And Plowshares Fund, dedicated to helping build a safe, secure, nuclear weapon-free world at Plowshares.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our web guru, Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. And this week, we say farewell to our intern, Blythe Haga. Blythe, we hope someday you'll hire us as interns when you go on to do whatever massively successful thing it is that you do. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walterover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, who will be next year's Person of the Year? Peter Gross.
Barack Obama. After he goes back on his last campaign promise and becomes a Republican, the choice will be obvious.
Kerry O'Connor.
Canada, because by this time next year, it's going to be looking really good.
Adam Felber.
Mark Zuckerberg will win again, but the award will be totally redesigned and confusing.
Well, if Time Magazine chooses any of those people panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Peter Gross, Kerry O'Connor, Adam Felber. Thanks to all of you, you beautiful people, for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.